Hello, my friends, and welcome to season two of the Bardic Babble podcast, the show where we talk to creatives about the things they create. As always, I'm your host, Devin, and I'm so incredibly excited to share this season with you all. I've got some amazing guests to enlighten you on their creative processes and just dive into some really great conversations. If you've been with us from the start, thank you for sticking around and being patient through the hiatus. I had a few things pop up, but we're back in the hot seat. We're grinding along, chatting with some amazing folks, and I have a feeling it's gonna be our best season yet. So stay tuned and let's dive on in. Joining me today is one of my favorite YouTube personalities. Their crap guides to D&D never cease to make me laugh and bring a smile to my face. Talking about the one, the only, Jocat. If you have not seen their crap guides yet, pause this podcast, head over to YouTube, go check them out. They are hysterical. If they don't make you laugh, I'll eat a shoe. Send it to me, I will eat it. That all being said, I want to take a minute to dive into the business. Per usual, if you are not following us over on TikTok or on YouTube, I highly suggest you do. We do daily D&D skits and comedy, educational bits, the whole nine. We run the gamut. You can find me at Merlin the Bard. I know some of you are like, oh, dang it, Devin, you used to be Bard Podcast. It's true. Used to be Bard Podcast is now Merlin the Bard. You can find me there. TikTok, YouTube. I will see you there. And now, without further ado, let's dive into our interview with Jocat. Alrighty, friends, welcome back to Bardic Babble, the show where we talk to creators about the things that they create. And we are blessed with one of my favorite online creators, been following the crap guides for years now. I have Mr. Jocat.
Oh my gosh, has it really been years?
It has been years. I think I actually was introduced to your stuff back in like 2018, 2019. So it's been a few years.
Yeah, that would have been around where I started. Gosh, it's hard to think about the Crap Guide series as years ago.
Right.
Because it still feels current, but...
It's a blink of the eye and you lose it, especially over the last couple of years.
Wow.
Well, thank you so much for jumping on the horn and joining me on the season two revival of the podcast. I greatly appreciate it.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks.
And thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. Let's start at the top of it all. Let's introduce yourself, the crap guides, Jocat, the whole persona, and everything that that you create that you know, some of the audience members might not be aware of.
Yeah. So my name is Joseph. I go by Jocat online. It is a shortening of my full name, Joseph Catalanello. And I am a content creator primarily on YouTube, who makes a bunch of silly videos, leaning into more animations now compared to before. But yeah, I started my channel in about, I think it was summer of 2018 or 2017, something like that. I was in college and I was staying for college summer school, and I had plenty of free time on my hands because I only had like one class a day because it's summer school. And I was like, you know what, I'm gonna make myself a YouTube channel. So I did, as a birthday present to myself a few days before my birthday, I made another YouTube channel, and I just put my editing skills to the use, making a couple of Let's Plays. And then Monster Hunter World was coming out, and I was like, I want my friends to play Monster Hunter, but it's kind of daunting. I'm gonna make a silly, stupid guide for them, because all the guides online are like 30 minutes long and overwhelming amounts of information. I'm gonna make this fun. And that summer, I kind of blew up in the Monster Hunter community and who shared them around. And I got upwards to about 10,000 subscribers. I still remember that being a big number. And then from there, I just kind of started doing a bunch of other ideas. That was my gateway into doing a bunch of other content that I've always wanted to make. Not just the crap guides, but, you know, animations, video essays, more Let's Plays. And a bunch of stuff. Yeah,
that's awesome. Before we get too far, congratulations on 1 million. I saw you just passed that the other day.
Thank you.
Huge milestone. Like, that's incredible. Did you ever at any point in time in your journey like set a milestone to get to 1 million? Or
I never anticipated it, nor did I plan to. I'm just like, and even now it's like, okay, it's kind of nice. I mean, it is a major milestone, don't get me wrong, but it's like, you know, the work still needs doing, and I still need to, you know, want to rather make each video the best that it can be. because like the numbers are just kind of like a nice supplement to the work, but it is pretty nice. I never had the goal in mind. I was just like, I'm gonna make the best videos that I can,
and here you are. So a large portion of the audience is D&D and D&D fans. Mm-hmm. What segued you from Monster Hunter to D&D? Like, I can see the line, but like, how did you get there?
That is to say, there wasn't one. Monster Hunter happened to be one of my hobbies, and so was D&D. And I just happened to want to make something of my hobby to share, because that's what my content is. My content is just stuff that I like and want to see out in the world. And if it doesn't exist, then I can make it myself. You know, that's what I see my channel as, kind of a means to make things that I want to exist. Because I know a few friends of mine, once again, just like Monster Hunter, I wanted to introduce them to D&D or just the different D&D classes. And so many guides online are boring and long and tedious to get through and kind of confusing. So I was like, let's just make like a Cliff's Note version that just summarizes it in a fun way as well, that's entertaining. And that really was what gave my channel a second wind as well, because I think were it not for the D&D crap guides, I'm pretty sure my channel would have died.
You think so?
Yeah. There was, if I could go on a slight tangent real quick.
Totally.
There was a period of time after the Monster Hunter crap guides were finished where I was grasping for something to retain the audience. And the biggest blow to me, kind of motivation-wise and emotionally, and put me kind of in a creative depression, was when I made this one video essay about a video game that I really, really liked called Klonoa 2. And that was a script and video that I had planned before even the crap guides, before I even had a channel. Mm-hmm. Rather, once I had a channel, but before I had even an audience, I was like, and I had worked on it from pre-production to completion about a year, from like script writing to editing to grabbing footage. And that was always a plan that I wanted to do, including the animated portion of it.
Right.
And so much work and so much effort and so much emotional investment in one video that did so bad, like just exposure wise, really was a big blow to the motivation. But it did teach me a very valuable lesson in that it doesn't matter how many people saw it. If nobody saw it, how happy would I be with this creation by itself? That's what matters. Mm-hmm. Because I do look back on some videos that did do very well, and I'm like, I feel bad because I'm like, I didn't put as much effort as I could in this video, and now everyone remembers it as this, and everyone sees it as this, and it's not even that good.
Right. It's funny how that works in content creation. Just, you know, the level of input doesn't always translate to the reception in the general audience. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I love that you noted on is that content creation, and I'm summarizing here, it's for you. You do what you do for you and for your friends. And I feel like so many content creators, especially in this new age content creator lifestyle, people forget about that.
People miss that so much. So many people I see among the younger audience, and it's understandable because they're growing up on this on YouTube and TikTok and Twitch and stuff. They're like, I want to do this and develop a community. It's like, you can't. Well, you can want that, but don't make that your goal, because that is not a guarantee.
Right. Right.
You have to keep in mind, okay, what do you do if that doesn't happen? Because it very well might. I do feel lucky that there was an audience for it, because right now I think D&D is in kind of a golden age right
yes,
now.
Agreed.
I am lucky to have been making it now. I am lucky to have not had somebody else make something like this before me.
Right.
And I am lucky enough that perhaps it caught wind in some kind of algorithm that allowed it. There's a lot of things involved that would have contributed to the success. I do think some things about my videos would have made them good and like reach an audience regardless, like eventually, but it is a lot of luck. You might make the best thing in the world and maybe nobody will see it. So you have to take into account what you'll do if that happens. Is it worth it? If you're doing it just for the audience and just for the fame and recognition, is the product without that, or whatever you produce, is your art without that good enough that you would be happy with it? Because you're the only one who is, you have to treat it as if you're the only one who's going to see it.
Yeah, and it's wild, especially now that there's so much money involved in content creation and being an influencer. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people get lost in the sauce when it comes to, oh, I can start a YouTube channel and, you know, mm-hmm. 6 months be making a lifestyle out of it kind of a thing. And, you know, it doesn't help that there are content creators like, you know, mm-hmm. Mr. Beast and Logan Paul who kind of glorify that side of...
They make it look easy, too.
They truly do.
It looks like just their everyday.
Yeah. And now they've gotten a little better with, you know, including their editors and their content creation teams. But like you, for example, it's beginning to end. It's all you. You do the animations, the cuts, the everything. How, just for my curiosity, how long did one of the crap guides take from beginning to end?
Oh, man. So that's an interesting thing in and of itself, because the first crap guides to Monster Hunter took like a day to write, record, and edit. And now, because I have such a higher standard and expectation and all this pressure,
right.
Realistically, I probably could write and edit and make them in a day again. But like, man, it's the emotional toll that it takes and like just the artistic ideas that need to come to me.
Right.
There was one phrase that was told to me from Takahata 101, who is one of the founders of Team 4-Star, actually. He, back when I was still kind of a lot smaller, he said some advice to me that I still hold true to till this day, in that creating is kind of like breathing, where every time you create, you're breathing out. So sometimes you have to breathe in, and that's the time that you're not creating, the time that you're thinking, the time that you're experiencing life and you're getting ideas and just like getting the nerve to create. Like that is one thing that I'm struggling with, is building the nerve to create, building the motivation, especially because we don't exist in a vacuum. And, right. You know, I know now, just in the back of my mind, there is an audience there that I have to keep their expectations in mind when creating, which I do, you know, I know that goes against what I said about create as if nobody's watching. Which I do still uphold as like the primary thing,
right.
That I do as well. And I understand I'm sitting in a position of privilege where I can say that, you know, it's easy for me to say being at a million subscribers, but
right. Every
other creator worth their salt will tell you the same thing, because if you're chasing algorithms, it's going to feel bad. But anyway, the crap guides of Monster Hunter took like a day to write, record, and edit and upload, because I didn't have an audience. I just made them for me and my friends, and I had a bunch of free time and I could just do it.
Right.
I was in college, in a dorm, you know, everything was paid for. You know, they provide food for me, so I didn't have to cook. I had a lot more, you know, like a lot more free time, a lot of factors involved that allowed me to just
right. Do
that, just create. The crap guides to D&D, I tried to do them every other day, but then I immediately felt the dip in writing quality, because I wasn't letting myself come up with the ideas, come up with the jokes, and just like writing the first thing that comes to mind. Because like every good writer will tell you that good writing is an inevitability that just requires enough re-edits and passes and edits.
Right.
That's why editors are so important, because usually bad writing is usually a rough draft, you know, like a first draft. Mm-hmm. Whenever there's a bad script, it's usually because it's a first draft. Whenever there's a really good script, usually it's because you look it over and you look at the history of creation, and it's because it went through like 8 different revisions.
Right.
You know?
So during your content creation journey, did you ever experience burnout?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. All the time. I felt a lot of burnout after I finished the crap guides to Monster Hunter. Massive burnout after I finished the first half of the crap guides to D&D, because those started getting longer and longer in between them. Like I wanted foolishly to try and do them all that December that I first started the Barbarian video. You'll notice that it started in December, and then I wanted to do them all and cap it off with Crap Guide to DM that December.
Right.
That was foolish. And then I tried to do it the next December and couldn't do it either. And then the December after, I finally was able to do it all, because I just kept getting new ideas and more stuff. And I am glad that I waited, because I got Matt Mercer to star in it. So that's... guest in it, rather, not star in it.
Right.
But yeah, I felt a lot of burnout. Like after each episode, I would get this weird high of like, okay, I'm ready to create the next one. And then I would get like a few paragraphs in, and then I'd be like, this is garbage. This is bad. I can't do it. And then I would spend like several weeks just away from it. In fact, I'm experiencing some burnout right now, what with finishing my own D&D stream, D&D campaign, Necrohunt, and just not wanting to get back to work on some other projects that I've had coming down the pipeline.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think every creator experiences burnout to some extent.
Oh, 100%. I took a year off this podcast because I was experiencing that. It doesn't help that, you know, the pandemic rolled through like a freight train, but
yeah, we're literally living through a global traumatic event.
So. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you can cut yourself some slack. And I bet that year off did you some good too.
It was great because then I got to dabble in other creative endeavors. You know, I moved over to TikTok. I played around over there. And TikTok taught me a lot of valuable lessons when it comes to content creation, more in the, you know, do it for yourself. And, you know, it's interesting to sit on the two sides of it. You know, one as a consumer of the content and one as a creator of the content to say, you know, make it for yourself.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of interpretations to that. But specific to burnout, is there like a tried and true method that you have to break out of your burnout, your funks, or whatever anyone wants to call it? Or is it just one of those, like, the inspiration just flows one day?
I wouldn't say it's tried and true, but I do like what you do, what you did with TikTok. It's just like, try other stuff. Just do other things. Live your life. Try creating in a different medium, because it can do you some good and get you some new angles that might inspire you. Or just relax, you know?
Yes.
There's some story, I don't remember what Renaissance artist, but there was some Renaissance artist that was commissioned by, like, Italian royalty or something. I'm completely wrong, but those who know the story will know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Who basically was like, I will commission you. He was like a famous painter who made like lots of stuff, and this royalty was like, hey, can you paint us something? Here's like 10 million francs or something, whatever, that's French money. But, and he was like, okay. And then he spent a year just going on vacation and just visiting a bunch of places and traveling, and then like they were like, hey, it's been a year, where's that painting? And he's like, I'm still getting the inspiration. And then like a few months later, he comes back and paints like this thing that sells for millions. And it's like, sometimes that's what you got to do. You know, you're an artist. Our work is very not unconventional. And that is risky. Like, that's not a sustainable business, right? Because art is not a sustainable business. Our art is like, we don't get paid a salary. We're paid based on, it's an entertainment. You know, that's why movies and games are they're so scared of taking risks, because it's hard to make science out of art.
Yep.
You know, how do you guarantee money being flowed into such a subjective, you know, job, that it's all based off the back of how many people enjoy it?
Totally. That's actually one of my favorite book series, The Three Body Problem. It's a sci-fi. It talks about like different principles of physics and things like that. But the main character is tasked with solving this world-ending threat, and he literally just slacks off until the last minute. They're like, all right, doomsday is in 11 seconds. What do we do? And he flips two switches, because he spent that entire year just absorbing all this different technical knowledge and know-how. And that's, I try to approach anything I do creatively,
yeah,
with that mindset. You have to absorb 10 times more than you're going to put out.
Absolutely. And in a way, you can kind of count that as working, because you're developing, your brain is your asset, and you need to, you know, well, maybe not count it as working, but recovering and just getting the buildup and stuff. Because some might argue that's really unhealthy to consider yourself always working, because when are you not working? You
know? Right, exactly.
But like when you're in an artistic field, everything is an asset, you know, including living your life, being free.
Yeah, and experiencing. So when you are in your kind of like cool down / warm up periods, is there anything that you personally like to consume? TV shows, music, books?
Oh, video games. I'm a big gamer. I love playing video games.
Yeah?
Too much.
What are you jamming on lately?
Currently, right now, I'm playing a lot of Elden Ring, as everybody is.
I love it.
I have a soft spot for the Souls franchise. I like it. So I'm one of those Souls people, Souls fans, who likes the Souls games, but actually actively criticizes it.
Sure.
And I'm actually like gotten in plenty of heated Twitter argument, which I gotta stop, because it's just whatever. Like, I just have my own personal feelings of maybe it could be more accessible, speaking as someone who is able to play the games and like complete them and stuff.
Right.
I've been modding Skyrim again, just as an escape, because it's like The Sims but fantasy. Whenever you mod it, and it's nice, it fills a niche that no other game is able to. I play Slay the Spire, which sucks up all my spare time.
Love that game.
Oh, you play Slay the Spire? Yeah. Who's your favorite character?
You know, it has been a while. The little wizard guy, though.
The Watcher, the robot guy with the zappy lightning.
Yeah,
I like Watcher. I always try to make like a claw deck, because claw is a bad card unless you get more claws, and it goes against his orb thing. But it's so satisfying when you pull one off, because it's just like millions of attacks that are free and just pile up. Yeah, Slay the Spire has been my comfort game. But, I mean, every now and then I go back to Monster Hunter. I've kind of fallen out of favor a little bit, but I'm sure the interest will come back because I always go back to Monster Hunter. I think it's just the time that I spent with it being primarily my job and being like the only means. For the longest time, Monster Hunter was like the only way I felt people would watch me. Whenever I did live streams, people would only come watch Monster Hunter. Whenever I did videos, people would only watch Monster Hunter. So I think I have like a deep rooted, like subconscious kind of, I don't know, disdain for the game. But it's not the game's fault. But it's just like, oh, like I feel like I have to play it. So now I don't. But it's not that. I still love Monster Hunter, and I return to it every now and then.
Did you ever jump on Dauntless when it was running around?
I did, yes. I guess I was just too sucked up into Monster Hunter, because Dauntless was actually filling that niche of like Monster Hunter on PC when Monster Hunter seemed like it was never coming to PC. And I was like, all right, well, I'll just play this. And then it came to PC, and Dauntless was sweating in its boots. But I should check it out sometime. It's kind of like a live service game, so it must have gotten tons and tons of update and content over time.
Oh yeah.
So I should check it out. I talked with the Dauntless guys at one of the PAXs once, and they seem like good people. They seem very passionate about the game and Monster Hunter. I was like, are you worried now that Monster Hunter is coming to PC that that's gonna affect your launch or anything? And they're like, I mean, probably, but we love Monster Hunter, and if anything, you know, we're congratulating them, and they seem like good people.
That's cool. I like those kind of relationships in the gaming space.
Yeah.
Just a little background. I work in the gaming space. I do talent management.
Mm.
So I deal with a lot of like the developers and the publishers and stuff like that. And there's just some weird animosity between different little groups.
Yeah.
And it's just like, but
we're all in this together.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what about Inscription? Did you check out Inscription?
I have checked out Inscription. I've been playing it a little bit on just in my spare time off stream.
It's so
and
great.
It's just like it just keeps throwing curveballs at me. Every time I think I get the game, it's like, wait, what this now? it's this now? And I don't want to spoil anything for anybody listening, but like it is just like revelation after revelation, and I'm playing it, and my partner is having a fun time watching me play through it and figuring out all this stuff, especially since she watches Markiplier play it, and she gets frustrated whenever he plays because he doesn't play as good as me, and then because like she'll watch me play and then she'll watch Markiplier play afterwards, and she's like, what are you doing, idiot? Just like and that makes me feel good. It makes me feel like I know what I'm doing.
Right. So outside of video games, do you have like a comfort TV show or book that you go back to?
I should read more, shouldn't I? I haven't read in a long time, but I should read. I do like to watch YouTube. I'll listen to video essays. Actually, I do. Me and my partner recently have just been watching Disney movies. I haven't watched movies in a long time, but ever since my partner moved in, we've just had like movie nights where we just watch movies, and it's allowed me to watch ones that I'm sure would have been on the back burner for the longest time. And I like to litter in. I just like to watch animated movies, really. They're my comfort zone. Unsurprisingly, I will watch a new one. Like we watched Turning Red, which was fantastic, and then occasionally watch an old one like Road to El Dorado or Treasure Planet.
Classics.
And then watch a new one like Encanto. It's good. I love animated movies.
Nice. Me too. I have found myself, especially as I get older, that I like the animated medium a lot more than live action.
Yeah,
it's a little easier for my brain to process, I think, just because there's a lot more going on screen. But
and I just like the visuals more. Like they're more visually interesting than live action for me.
Well, and like where we're at right now with animation, it's mind-blowing. Like Spider-Verse, Into the Spider-Verse, or Mitchell's versus Machines. Like
I thank Spider-Verse for bringing in this kind of new era of animation where people are trying different styles rather than. No disrespect to the animators who work very, very hard at Pixar, Illumination, and DreamWorks, but for the longest time, I feel like animated movies kind of looked the same. Like, they all use the same shaders. Like,
yes.
If you showed me, like, a background city from, let's say, Seoul versus one from Sing versus one from, I don't know, any other animated movies, they just kind of look the same, you know? But it's nice that they're leaning into the more stylization that you can do with animation, you know?
Right. So as you've been progressing in your just kind of, you know, animation career and medium, have you, and this might just be one of those, like, because you do it and you talk about it, you see it more, but do you see more individuals leaning into an animation kind of a medium, especially on YouTube, or?
I feel it's not more people are leaning. I think just as many people are leaning into it as they always were. I don't think there's any like wave of new people or anything, but I do think that it does draw in. That is one thing that I will say, with the caveat that you shouldn't create to try and build an audience. But if you do, you probably have a better chance with animation because of the fact that it is more visually interesting than a vlogger just sitting and having a talking head, because that requires like interesting topics. Whereas interesting visuals can go a long way to draw in people. Like animation does very well on YouTube, I feel, in terms of getting people to click and watch, especially considering the audience on YouTube is on the younger side. It's definitely gotten older over time, but you know, younger people are on YouTube. Right. And younger people like animations.
Yes, yes, they do. My kids are a prime example of it. Now, what are you working on currently? Like, what are some of the projects? You mentioned your D&D actual play is wrapping up. Is there?
Yeah, no, that's finished. All the videos on demand all are cut down and uploaded to my channel. It is complete. So nice. If I could chill right now, if anybody is interested in listening to a D&D podcast that doesn't last 30 plus episodes. Balcanus Necrohunt is 22. So if you want to see a finished campaign of one that I'm very, very proud of and has gone through rewrites and I've developed even before, like I've had this kind of basically a module, like a homebrew module that I've developed for years and years and years and run for many groups,
right,
that I'm very proud of and has fantastic work with this team that helped me work on like background music and art and stuff. Necrohunt, I don't know, maybe could be good introduction to D&D podcasts, or good introduction to D&D, because it's like I'm not trying to be subversive in my D&D. I think it works well as a introductory D&D campaign as well, even with its subversions. It's just like going on an adventure.
Love it. Let's peel back some of the layers. Like what's it about?
Oh yes, so and we'll go back to what my plans are.
Sure.
Now, later, sorry.
Yeah, no worries.
Tangent. So Necrohunt is about the kingdom of Balcanus, where all necromancy is illegal. Super original idea, I know. And basically, there's a group of adventurers that is hired by the Viscount, basically something of a president of the place, to go hunt down and capture and arrest the leader of a necromancer cult known as the Spine of Death, who also happens to be the Viscount's sister. Ooh. And political drama ensues. It is, I would consider it somewhat of a very politically focused campaign, because it talks about the politics of magic and what should be illegal and not illegal when it comes to magic. Because I like to delve into ideas of how worlds work in fantasy.
Sure.
So if you're interested in that, and also keep in mind, some people might be like, oh, this sounds like an anti-necromancer campaign. And I did get a lot of that, where it's like, this is a necromancer blasphemy here. This is, I will not stand for this. And it's like, just watch. If you think it's anti-necromancer, just watch. And although that might be spoiling some of the twists and themes of the campaign, maybe that might get you interested.
That's kind of cool to, you know, just kind of cross-section here is, you know, how magic would be viewed, because it's nice to and neat to look at, you know, magic systems as if they don't exist, but you know,
right,
in the head of a DM it's like, no, these exist, these are what, you know, everybody's gonna be living through and playing through.
Yeah.
So what got necromancy to the point of being illegal in your world?
In my world, necromancy is illegal for the same thing. I don't know if this is too many spoilers actually, because it delves into it in the actual campaign, but I guess I'm okay with sharing it here, because I don't know, if you wanted to watch Necrohunt or listen to Necrohunt, you probably would and skip this part. So it delves into necromancy is not only illegal, it's also discriminated against. People who are seen as necromancers, there's a visual cue where they have little black veins coming from their fingers and face and eyes and stuff. And it's purely cultural. It's just because people decided that it was evil and impure and stuff. Because from the necromancer's perspective, the soul has moved on. The body is purely a husk, a thing, an item to be used as a tool, no different from a tree being chopped down and turned into wood for a house. You know, there is a necromancer town where the houses are built out of bones, because the bones of the people who are dead, they're not using them. It's not disrespect, because their spirit has moved on, you know? Why would they care? And also the idea of consenting to be resurrected and being used as a skeleton warrior or something. I don't know. It's like, sign this and you agree to have your body be used or something. It's like, does that make it okay? You know, like all these questions I like to delve into. And you might see that in Necrohunt as well.
I'm going to have to check this out. I like when little bits of magic are you know, dissected like that and blown up at large. There was a book series I read a while ago where magic users in the world, if they use magic for too long, it opens a portal to the book's variation of hell and lets a demon out. So it's like you can use magic, you can help, you can, you know, make the river flow faster, make the crops go.
It's at a risk.
Yeah, but you'll become a demon and then the king and his little armies are chasing you down because, well, you're using magic and magic's illegal. It's really interesting. The Armored Saint, a very sapphic and female-led fantasy where the main character breaks a lot of the social norms. And yeah, it's really cool. Power suits, magic, demons.
Nice.
Yeah, very fun. Cool. So after Necrohunt, like what is next for
That's right. Yeah, we were gonna go back to that. So what's next for my channel? I'm gonna be wrapping up the Crap Guides to Final Fantasy. I've got three more for those, the three different DPS roles. And then a few kind of like side off, one-off things. I'm gonna be ending, kind of capstoning one of my lesser series, is character creator critique. I love character creators in video games and I know what makes a good one or a bad one.
Right.
And I kind of just want to, I feel like I've been repeating myself in a lot of them. So I just want to make one all-encompassing, here's what makes a good character creator, so that that can just be applied to them, to any game.
Right.
But then after that, I'm going to be going over a slight rebranding of the channel. This is not a secret, but I'm ending the Crap Guides. I wanted to end them after the Crap Guides to D&D was over. But after this one, I'm going to end it. I'm going to retire the character of Joe Crap. I'm not going to use him again. I'm just kind of tired of writing that way and playing that character.
Okay.
And I feel it's done. It's done with, and it's too demanding on me. And I'm just not fulfilled by creating that type of content anymore. I know that's going to make a lot of people sad because, oh, there's still so much potential. But these videos take a lot out of me. You know, if it were easy, I would definitely do it for every hobby that I had, but also it's just I feel like the format doesn't lend well to everything. It's like some people, whenever I stream Call of Duty, people are like, hey, can you make a crap guide to Call of Duty? I'm like, what do I do a crap guide on? What, each gun? It's like you pull the trigger and you shoot and it's 900 rounds per minute. Great. Like, what, how much can I actually make content about that, you know?
Right.
But I don't know, maybe some people have ideas that I don't. But yeah, I'm gonna be rebranding. I'm probably gonna be doing more video essay style stuff like I did for the Klonoa video. I'm probably going to be doing more just one-off animations because those are fun and I can just put whatever and it doesn't have to coincide with anything. I want to make more Gabo Ventures. Sure. I made two of those and then I had to put them on the shelf to make way for other more important stuff, because maybe that's the next like series thing I do, is more Gabo Ventures, because that's the closest thing that I have to like a consistent series after the Crap Guides are over, because that's because the Crap Guides were my consistent series, but now I won't have one.
It's bittersweet rebranding. You know, a lot happened through those animations and through those series and to that content, you know, and a lot of growth as an individual happens. So, you know, I'm sorry to see the Crap Guides going to the wayside, but, you know, I'm very hopeful for your future, and I hope you get the same fulfillment out of it.
Thank you. It's not an easy decision, knowing how many people have come to my channel because of them and for them and love them.
Totally.
But I mean, I gotta, you know, I gotta look after myself creatively as well and emotionally.
Oh, 100%. And it's also interesting because like those VODs will live forever.
Yeah, they're still there. You can just rewatch them. And hey, I've said this several times before, if you feel as though you want to continue the Crap Guide legacy and make your own Crap Guide style content in your own style, by all means, go ahead. I ask you to name it something else, but even then, I can't stop you. But like, if you want to do like funny, fast talking insult man style content, go ahead. Like, you do it.
Sure. Yeah.
Make the do what I did and make the content you want to see.
Exactly. Exactly. Great words. Do you do animation professionally or just for content creation and just for you?
I don't know. Do you count this says professionally?
I do, right? Yes. I guess the better way to phrase it is,
if you're talking more traditionally, like under a company, yes, or for someone, I guess no, I've never done it professionally. Mm-hmm. But that's why I'm okay with YouTube, like doing this kind of content on YouTube, is because I'm developing a skill that can be used professionally if/when YouTube eventually doesn't work out, because I don't anticipate I'm going to be doing YouTube forever.
Sure.
YouTube is more, and also YouTube is more just a medium and a means of which for me to share my content. You know, if it wasn't on YouTube, it would probably be somewhere else.
Right.
I would still want to make videos and animations and share them somewhere.
So if you had to choose a animation house to work under, like today, you got a dream contract, who would you want it to be with?
Oh, man. Oh, boy. Oh, probably one of those studios that works for Riot, you know, on the League of Legends stuff.
So beautiful.
Because those guys do some amazing work. And I know the word League of Legends is dirty among internet folk, but like, you got to admit, their animation, the animated movies that they make and shorts, they are so good. Arcane is amazing.
Amazing.
Just look at Arcane. Arcane is not only a visual spectacle, it's a storytelling spectacle as well.
I argue that Arcane is kind of like this perfect culmination of like pop culture masterpiece almost.
Yeah,
because it's almost like, you know, Jurassic Park back in the 90s. Everybody saw Jurassic Park or Star Wars before that. And I think Arcane is going to be this generation's version of that. Everybody played League of Legends leading up to Arcane, or nobody, you know, somebody that did. So it's interesting.
Or if I had to pick a different choice, Sony Animation Studios, considering it seems as though, what with Spider-Verse and Mitchell's versus the Machines blowing up and taking off, they're starting to kind of let their kind of directors and animators kind of do their thing. And I think that's good. And that sounds, just looking at Spider-Verse and Mitchell's versus the Machines, you can tell that the creator of that, the lead of that project, got to make what they wanted. And that is, you know, the best opportunity is being able to make what you want with all of the, it's the polar opposite of the studio meddling, you know.
And it's I love especially those two films because of how diverse the entire team is from top to bottom. And it really just kind of goes to show that Sony was just like, we believe in this project, like go and make it. And I mean, proof's in the pudding. We have what, two more?
They were rewarded.
Yeah. So, you know, they're obviously seeing returns. And I wish more studios would lean to it.
I hope that is a lesson to other studios and to Sony, because boy, oh boy, sometimes big corporate suits kind of like don't learn that lesson whenever they're like, they see someone, they let one of their directors just do what they want and kind of execute on their creative vision, and then the movie does great, and then they're like, okay, let's reel it in, and then the next movie is bad because of corporate meddling.
Yeah,
like, how do you not get it? Just let the creative do their thing.
Well, and like another really good example of this is Critical Role's Vox Machina animation. You know, it's fan driven, animated with almost no reins on it, and I think it was the most trending thing on Twitter for like 4 days straight.
I still yet to see it. All right, I have a confession to make.
Okay.
I have never listened to or watched a single session of Critical Role.
Blasphemy.
Nor do I have an interest.
No, I get it. I am in the same boat.
It's nothing against it. It's just, I think I just don't like listening or watching D&D podcasts. I can't even listen to my own Necrohunt sessions, you know? Like, because if I have it on in the background, I'm not paying attention to what's happening, and I'm not going to know what's going on.
Right.
And then if I have to pay attention, it's just, most D&D is fluff. It's garbage. Most D&D is just, if you're not playing it and you're just listening to it, it's just so much to get to the meat, you know? And I think you don't realize that when you're playing.
Oh, totally. And if you don't start the journey with the crew, like whoever's, you know, making it, you're either playing catch up the entire time they're making the show, you miss a lot of the nuance. And
yeah, it's daunting. There's hundreds of episodes.
Yeah, exactly. I would recommend going and checking out the Critical Role animation. Titmouse was the studio on that. Fantastic. Not the best animation I've ever seen in my entire life, but the fact it's D&D, it's fantasy, it's no holds barred, like they just got to do whatever they want. It's fun. It's violent, it's gory, it's over the top with the language, yes. But
I gotta watch it sometime.
It's totally worth it, and it's nice to kind of like let off the reins on D&D. It's kind of like, you know, D&D was put in this really weird box for so long, and Critical Role definitely tried to break it and show that you can really play around in the medium. So
yeah, for all the trouble, not to the fault of Critical Role, for all the trouble and kind of arguing that Critical Role has caused in the D&D space, I do appreciate what they've done. They have done more good for D&D, I think, than bad. Again, not to their fault, you know, the Matt Mercer effect and people, the Critical Role effect of people wanting their game to be Critical Role, which, by the way, your game will never be like Critical Role.
Ever.
Never in a million years, and it shouldn't try to be. But yeah, I think it's done great to bring D&D into the pop culture space and show yep. that it can just be fun. It's just fun among friends and hanging out and just doing stupid nonsense. Having an adventure.
Having an adventure. The core of it all. Outside of D&D, have you ever played any additional tabletop systems, Monster of the Week, anything like that?
Yes. I have played one game of World of Darkness. I've kind of dabbled around. Nothing has really caught my eye yet, aside from maybe Pathfinder, which is unsurprising right. since Pathfinder is kind of like D&D's offshoot black sheep cousin. I played that once, and it was refreshing to see how much customization there was compared to 5th edition, because I love 5th edition, but I'm starting to feel the stagnant kind of character creation process, where it doesn't feel like you get a lot of choices in what you do. You pick your race, your class, your background, and then everything else is just kind of like
yeah.
there and just set in stone. Whereas Pathfinder, it's very customizable. I played a little bit of Starfinder. That was all right. A little bit too much for me. I played World of Darkness. I've played... there was one more. Can't quite remember. Some kind of like purely D6 system. It was like a post-apocalyptic style tabletop where how many points you had in a stat determined how many D6s you rolled. That one was pretty fun because it had, instead of races, you had like different clans of people. Like you had like sewer people who grew up in like nuclear waste pools that could be like cockroaches and sustain off of sewage water. And I was like, I want to play that. But I'm still pretty comfortable with 5th edition. It is my comfort zone. And goodness knows, I just like homebrew it to hell and back that I probably would have a better time just trying to find another system. But I love 5e. And more importantly, I understand 5e. You know, if I got another D&D, another tabletop system, I would have to relearn. I barely understand 5e. I'm barely able to... There's a handful of things that I'm able to remember off the top of my head with 5th edition. You think I'm going to try again with another one?
Right. Yeah. And then, I mean, not only that, but then you have to teach your players. You have to unlearn your players with 5e and then teach them the new system. So, yeah, I totally get 5e that.
5e is just easy.
Totally. My biggest gripe with 5e, and I'm feeling it a lot lately, is how inaccessible the materials really are. Like, you know, $60 and like from a, you know, a point of privilege being able to afford it, it's like, oh yeah, I could totally afford it. But I have had many conversations, especially with younger individuals getting into the hobby. They're like, I don't have $60 to spend.
$60 is a lot.
Yeah. Especially when they gatekeep all of their different classes and races.
Yeah. In the expansion books.
And they drip feed them. But it's like, you know, if you want to play a goblin, you got to wait till this next book comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's like D&D Beyond does a good job of bridging that to a degree. I just wish that D&D Beyond and, you know, print Wizards of the Coast could just get along and give you one or the other for some kind of a token or a discount.
Yeah.
Buy the book, get it on Beyond for free kind of a thing. So.
That'd be nice.
It would be.
Yeah, like a little code.
Yeah, and then they do it with their magic cards. You get it the arena stuff online. So,
or at the very least, like I'm sure I know why they can't do this is because they don't know if they're going to make new content in the future.
Right.
And then, but like it would be nice if they just had a all classes book and all races book.
That would be nice.
You know, like. But I understand they can't do that because maybe there might be new races in the future and that then you need that new one. And
right. Well, I actually started in Pathfinder. One of my favorite things is about them has always been all of their materials are online for free. Like they put it out on the PSRD.
Oh, that's nice.
For free because they understand like not everybody can afford it, but they want people to play the game, especially when, you know, they're the competitor to D&D. Mm-hmm. So
probably the biggest competitor.
But yeah, so that's I've always liked the character creation options and just how accessible they try to make the materials. I wish more people would look past the math with it.
Yeah. How's second edition?
It tried too hard to be 5e. It lost a little bit of its spirit in how wide and vast the game could really feel, especially with customization, in favor of streamlining the story process. So not bad, but just first edition, just it was gold, pure gold. At least in my opinion.
No, it's good to get perspective.
Totally.
Because I've heard something similar. I heard that it is simpler and easier to get into compared to first edition. But I mean, as with every change, something is lost in that.
Oh yeah, totally.
That's always the case with any change, really.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so that's really all the questions that I had. It's been a lovely conversation. So now we have one of two options, and I leave it solely in your hands. We can do a quick character building exercise. I give you a couple of keywords and items, and you build a character out of it. Or we can bid adieu and have a wonderful rest of our day.
Oh, you're going to present me that option and then present me to go, no, I want to end the show now? No, of course, let's build a character.
All right.
I love building characters.
Let me pull up the item generator. That way they are done completely on the fly and I have no say whatsoever. Okay, so how many items would you like? We can go up to four.
Let's do three. I think three's healthy.
Okay, so here are your three items. Use them however you will. It doesn't have to be a fantasy character. It could be sci-fi, it could be noir, whatever have you. Your three items are a kitchen knife.
Okay.
A pair of rubber gloves and street lights.
Street lights. I have these street lights, or these street lights are just simply part of the scenery.
I will leave creative interpretation to you.
Okay. Let's say street lights. Okay. Rubber gloves and
a kitchen knife.
A kitchen knife. Okay. A corrupt Eldritch horror version of the mom from Dexter's laboratory. Because when I heard kitchen knife and rubber gloves, I immediately thought of her bright yellow rubber gloves that she always wears all the time. However, she has been possessed by some kind of eldritch being that Dexter let through one of his portals in one of his experiments downstairs in his laboratory, and has taken over her and has allowed her to be more assertive. And unfortunately, this has taken a turn in which, instead of simply brushing off anyone who's kind of being kind of a dick to her, or just kind of being awful or annoying or inconvenient, instead of just doing the typical mom thing of that she would do, which I feel is in character, of like, oh, whatever, I'll just deal with it, oh, that's disappointing, now she's taking a stand for herself, and unfortunately for those who wrong her, that means taking them to dark alleyways or dark streets, isolating them, and she turns into a horrific monster creature, I don't know, that ambiguously takes them off into the darkness where the only thing left is, I don't know, a bit of their clothing, like a shoe left being lit by a single lamppost.
I love it.
Does she have a name? Hold on. Dexter's mom name. Oh, does she not have a name? Okay, what's a mom name? Can you think of one? What's a motherly name? Like Diane?
Ooh, yeah, Diane. I like Diane.
Diane. Let's call her Diane, except let's make it all like Eldritchy. Dihathleo. Dihathleus. The kitchen, readier of dinner.
The readier of dinner. I love it. Well, awesome. That was fun. Thank you for taking the creative dive. Other than that, let's do some social plugs. Where can we find you on the internet? Where can we find you on YouTube?
Okay. I am on YouTube. YouTube.com/JoeCat. It's probably the first result that you will find, even if you just search up JoeCat on YouTube. And I also stream Wednesday, Friday, Sunday on Twitch, twitch.tv/JoeCat. I am currently going through Elden Ring on Sundays, where I wander aimlessly and stumble into whatever comes my way. Wednesdays, I do Pathfinder Wrath of the Righteous, where I just go hunt demons, I guess, and stumble around as my D&D character, a rat. And Fridays, I do Final Fantasy XIV, where I just do whatever suits my fancy at the time. Probably going to be doing 6.1 when that patch drops.
Nice. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to just kind of explore animation and your creative processes. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks. for having me.
Of course.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Bardic Babble. Bardic Babble is a part of the Bard Podcast Network's family of shows. You can find Bardic Babble and all of our other shows at thebardpodcast.com. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe for updates on new episodes. We can't wait to share the next story with you.